You can now book for the National Association for Primary Education Conference 2024. This is focusing on SEND challenges and strategies. Join them at the University of Bedfordshire for a day filled with insightful discussion, workshops and networking opportunities. You can attend in person or online by visiting nape.org.uk/conference-2024. That's nape.org.uk/conference-2024.
Hello, my name is Mark Taylor and welcome to the Education on Fire podcast. The place for creative and inspiring learning from around the world. Listen to teachers, parents and mentors share how they are supporting children to live their best authentic life and are proving to be a guiding light to us all.
Hello, welcome back to the Education on Fire podcast. It's really great to be back with you again. And thank you to everyone who's been sharing the show with their colleagues, their friends, their family. This really is what we're all about, trying to just sort of share these amazing conversations and the interests and the inspiration of the great people that I'm having the opportunity to chat to every week. Now, today I'm delighted to be chatting to Edward D. Hess, and he is Professor Emeritus of Business Administration, Batten Fellow and Batten Executive in Residence Emeritus at the Darden Graduate School of Business, University of Virginia. He's the author of Hyperlearning, How to Adapt to the Speed of Change, and Own Your Work Journey, The Path to Meaningful Work and Happiness in the Age of Smart Technology and Radical Change. Now, Professor Hess spent 20 years in the business world as a senior executive and has spent the last 18 years in academia. Now, in total, he's the author of 13 books, over 140 articles and 60 Darden case studies. Now, it was fantastic to talk to Professor Hess with all of his expertise and knowledge, but I think the thing that came through the most for me is the fact that it's really about your humanness, how you can look after yourself, what it is about you being you, which is the secret of your success, especially in this world of fast-changing technology, and how we can work together, use them as tools, but not take away from that human experience. So I really hope you enjoy this wonderful conversation. Hi, Ed. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Education on Fire podcast. It's always great to speak to people from around the world. It's always great to speak to people who are just so dedicated to what learning is as well as education. So, yeah, thanks so much for being here.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. I look forward to a wonderful conversation.
So, can you start by giving people kind of a, I guess, a potted history of kind of where that learning comes from a sort of a career point and then that sort of academia standpoint?
Yeah. Well, learning was put in, basically given to me by my parents when I was very, very young. Let me just give you a little bit of information. We were a family of outsiders. We lived in a rural part of the state of Georgia. My father was a refugee. My mother was from New England. And so we were an outsider. And it was so important for my family that, you know, I understand that. But in addition, that I become a good learner. And so We were not wealthy or anything like that. My mother would save up money when I was in elementary school. She'd save up money over a month, 2 months, and take me to a bookstore and let me buy a book. And I basically started reading books when I was 6 years old. And I read books about, you know, famous people and about different parts of the world. And so it gave me dreams. And so reading, learning, you know, began very, very early. And that learning and the ability to do that was how I became accepted, if you will, into the environment I was in, because I, you know, truly enjoyed it. So learning has been integral to my life. And, you know, I've had good learnings, and I've had learnings which had to shake me up to help me be a better learner. So, you know, I read, you know, I'm still an avid reader. I think the key thing that vis-a-vis the learning is you know, I went through a time where I had a major transformation where I started basically what I write about every day is I actually live. And, you know, in my mid-30s, I hit a wall and I had to take my learning to a very different level. And so all I can say to you is learning is joyous. Learning is the pathway to having a happy life. And if there was ever a time in the world where we needed more learning, it's now. Because of everything going on, whether it's geopolitics, whether it's smart AI, and everybody is going to have to become a highly adaptive learner if they want to have meaningful work in the era we're going into. So learning is mission critical.
Absolutely. And I think what you said there is so key. It's the fact that we're talking about learning. We're not talking about knowledge. We're not talking just about study. We're talking about learning who we are, how we kind of decide to show up and work with all of these new technologies. And I think we're almost having to become more human and more aware of ourselves in order to go backwards from that step, which is kind of historically, yes, which I think society did in order to then move forward.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And it's that learning how to take ownership of yourself and what goes on in your mind, your ego, your emotions, your body, your words you use, your behaviors, because all of that either opens up the world or it closes the world when you do it the wrong way. And so it's going to be what's different. When I was growing up, you know, things were pretty settled for decades and decades. The era we're living in now is so fast paced and changing because of smart technology. I mean, the best scientists and researchers are saying that basically you'll have a new job. Everybody will have a new job about every 5 years because technology is going to continue to advance. And so this concept of learning, unlearning, and relearning at the speed of technological change brings learning completely to the focus. And that creates some major issues because, at least in the United States, and I'm sure in other countries, all right, our schools, all right, have a learning process that is from a different era. It's not from the new technology era. And schools are going to have to transform how they teach, what they teach, etc. And so we're at this pathway where people have to, you know, it all comes down to how do I learn? Unlearn and relearn at the speed of technological change so I can have meaningful work, a meaningful life, be happy. And it's fascinating because you go to school, you get your grades, you go to work, and that's been life. Well, now it's going to be completely different.
And you mentioned there that schools will have to change and, you know, adapt to this sort of new way. Do you actually think that they will? Because there are many people who would say, you know, the systems as it has been for well over 100 years and probably should have adapted, you know, 50 years or more ago to what was then the new world, let alone, like you say, this massive expansion that we're going into now.
Yeah, that's a great question. I've written a lot about that in the last 3 months. It's going to be very challenging. It's going to be very challenging. I think the thing that's possibly going to push it through is the reality that the downside of not becoming a highly adaptive learning person, a highly adaptive learning school, all right, et cetera, that it's going to be clear. Each country will make its own decisions, and how they do that will determine their ability to basically be survivable, be not at war, to be not human misery, All right, is a possibility. And so, and it's a massive undertaking, but it's funny, at least in the United States, four of the most probably famous educators and psychologists in at least in the United States forever, 1968 wrote a book on transforming U.S. public education. All right. And that was never adopted. But everything they were saying in 1968 is what needs to happen in schools today. All right. And that's so fascinating because they were talking about how people learn. And people learn by making meaning of things, by doing things, by trying things. We're not talking about rote memory. Memorize, take a standardized test, and get a good grade. Uh-uh. All right? That's all going in the trash can. And so, yes, I think it's a huge challenge. It's, you know, you've got countries in Europe that are far ahead on this. All right? Finland is an example. You've got some Eastern countries, Singapore, that are far, far ahead on this. You may be further ahead than we are, but in the United States, we are not there, all right? And we haven't bought into the massive change at this point in time. So it's going to be quite challenging, but it's going to impact not only what happens in the society, but it's going to impact geopolitical politics in the world. I mean, what's at stake here is huge. What is at stake here is huge.
And I think what I find really interesting is that, like you said, so much of it is about standardized testing. It's about putting yourself level with other countries and that kind of, we need to make sure we're all on some kind of equal playing field, but just slightly one-upmanship in terms of how that goes. And actually what we're going to be needing is someone who's actually just leading the way and saying, no, we know this is the way forward. We can see it. We can feel it. We're being told it. We're experiencing it. We're just going to literally forget about all that. It almost is the silver bullet that's going to change those sorts of things. And we talk a lot here on the show about how the small things are going to make a difference. But, you know, today it sounds like we're really talking about, you know, wholesale change for survival rather than just because we think it's a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it basically comes down to, you know, we're in an era of smart technology, which is going to get smarter and smarter and smarter. All right. It's not going to stop at this point in time. And so what does that mean? It means that, wow. All right. Information's being produced at such a fast rate. You know, how do I process all of that? How do we keep up with all of that? All right. And the organizations and the people who learn how to do that will be the people that will be the winners. The people that don't learn how to do that will be the people that will be left behind. And, you know, the numbers of automation of jobs is of predictions by Oxford University is huge. I mean, just for the United States, they're predicting 25 to 47% of the U.S. jobs is going to be automated by 2030. All right. I mean, we have some of the brightest people in the country saying today that if we don't change really fast by 2030, we may have real civil disorder in the country, in the United States. I mean, so much is at stake in the, at least in the United States, the education system is designed from the, you know, it comes from the federal government down to the state governments, and then from the state governments, it goes to the localities governments. And you've got these systems that have been built for the Industrial Revolution era, all right? The Industrial Revolution era is over, okay? We're in the smart technology era, and the ability to adapt and change. And it's going to be very, very hard for some states, some schools, other schools are biting into it. But also the critical thing is we're talking about changing the pedagogy from basically learning facts to human development. Every school is going to be in the business of human development, student by student. student by student, because students, we're different. And so we have to develop our learning skills, you know, how to think, how to listen, how to relate with other people, how to manage ourselves, manage our ego, our mind, our words, our behaviors, how to become an explorer, how to be fearless. I'll go into the unknown and I will figure it out. I will figure it out because I've done that personal inner stuff that's needed. Because if you think about it, I don't know about you, in my schooling, you know, in my elementary and high schooling and everything, there was never anything about what's going on inside of you. All right. What's going on with your mind, your ego? Okay. Do you know how to manage your emotions? And so the pedagogy is going to change to human development from memorization.
And I think the thing that strikes me often is the fact that, you, like you said, you talked about the system being based on the Industrial Revolution. So why did governments and people have such a difficulty sometimes thinking, well, obviously, we want to make sure that we're in the best position going forward from an economical point of view, a social point of view, a societal point of view. So it seems ridiculous that they're thinking that what we used to do because of something that happened all that time ago would still be working now. And, you know, you've got businesses that are turning around and saying we need these types of people thinking in critical thinking and working together in teams and communicating. We know this is going to be important, but there just sort of seems to be sort of too many people thinking about it and talking about it, but not being able to change it. And one of the things that I heard recently on one of these podcasts was the fact that to make some kind of difference, this particular person was saying, we almost need some of the businesses and people outside of education to really stand up. The people that really do have power, because they're large organizations or large businesses, and actually say, no, this is the way forward, or this is what we need, this is how things are going to change, and not just talk about it and have some kind of, these things are often relatively small amounts of money they plow into something compared to the size of the company, but say, look, we have an idea, or this is what we'd like to try and create collectively, you know, bring both the education side and the business side and the governmental side all to actually say, what can we do if we're going to start with a blank slate or morph in a way which is going to be sustainable? But until every stakeholder actually gets to that point, and hopefully, like you say, not before it's too late, it's still hard to see how that's going to change in the immediate future, bearing in mind, like you said, 2030 is one of these years that people are talking about of real kind of importance, which is only sort of 6 or 7 years away.
Yeah. I think part of it also, it's a little different country by country. Culture is so important, all right? And so, you know, I'll talk about the United States, but you know, we have a culture, all right, that was really created in the late 1940s. After President Roosevelt died, of survival of the fittest, all right? And we have a culture also of, you know, in the business world, you know, greed is good, all right? Now, you know, many people won't admit it, all right? But if we think about it and we go back and we look at the history, all right, after the New Deal, which was then basically being completely turned around. And so, you know, Finland's got a different culture. You know, the Nordic countries have different cultures. Singapore, Japan have different cultures. The Chinese have different cultures. The Canadians have different cultures. South America. So it depends a lot on the cultures of the country. And we probably are, you know, let's just say on the leading edge of being survival of the fittest, all right? We don't have a big social safety net here. And that's a major issue for what's happening right now and what's going to happen in the next 10 to 15 years. So how does that change? One, I'm not smart enough to answer that question because it's so complex. But I believe that at some point a light bulb's going to come on that, wait a minute, completely new game. We are not going to be a geopolitical leader if these things happen, okay, which are possible because of the technology, the speed of change in our education system. At some point, you know, we're not there yet, but at some point, at least in the United States, like a giant light bulb is going to come off in some very, very wealthy people's heads who are going to basically say, time out. We've got to reassess this. All right. That's my hope. That's what I've been advocating. To be determined. All right. To be determined, because it's what we're talking about is human transformation. All right. That's what we're really talking about, human transformation. And that's all about learning. And that's all about trying to figure out, you know, it's that old thing, you know, go to where the puck is going. It's okay. But it's going to be it's going to be interesting. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be hard. There's going to be huge issues. But what's it balance over the next, say, 10 to 15 years? Is the world. All right. And who's going to go up? Who's going to go down? And what's that all going to mean? I mean, we're going to be in an era that's, you know, hasn't been anything like this, at least in the United States, since the Great Depression. But we're talking about, not that there will be actual bombs and wars, but the volatility in the world is going to be, you know, like a world war, in the sense that there's so much up and down and changes. But it all comes back to something that you have said, is in order for the changes to be made, the people who think they know everything have got to step back and actually re-become a learner. Because so many of the people and the philosophies and the ideas are sort of like in concrete in their head. Yes, it worked up to now for some of you, okay? But now we're not talking about those years. We're now talking about a completely new game, a completely new game. Technology, smart robots, all right? Smart robots who can have conversations with your children. Smart robots who will be babysitters, all right? Whoa, are you sure that you got this under control?
It is an amazing prospect, isn't it? And I think it's one of the things that I liked. Well, there are two things I liked about your book in the way that it's kind of approached. And one is the fact that you've got it sort of divided into workshops in terms of that sense of it's actually about you doing something. It's not just about a passive idea of what this is going to be. And I think the other part of it, which I liked, is the idea that, like you said, if we're going to make change, we hope it's the people in having the opportunity to make it now. But let's assume things just keep going for a little bit and that doesn't start to work. The people that are in a position to make change in maybe 2 years' time, because they're coming out of the education system, but have a voice, they have thought about this, they do want it to be different, and they're in a position of influence by conversations and understanding and going into the workforce and into sort of policy or whatever it happens to be, they're going to be coming at it from a different standpoint. And I think that's a very exciting prospect, and it's also, I think, a positive one in terms of how this may develop. So take us into sort of why you kind of worded and structured the book in the way it was and how you hope that development may move forward.
Yeah, well, you're quite correct. it was intentional for the book to be a how-to book, how-to learn book, how to become a highly adaptive learner, and what are the tools that will help you do that? What is the end game? And obviously the end game is having meaningful work and being happy. All right. I mean, that's the end game. But it instead of giving content and learning, we'll call it certain facts, the book specializes on, we need to start with you. All right. We need to start what's going on inside of you. What can we do to help you become a better learner inside of you? And that's where the taking ownership of you comes into play. To take ownership of you, you need to develop, all right, or take ownership of your ego, all right? Because your ego can get in the way of learning, all right? Because you think you know when you don't know, all right? I mean, the fact of the matter is, the science is clear. All of us are wired, scientifically wired, to go out in the world and seek confirmation of what we believe, affirmation of our ego, our story about who we are, and cohesiveness of our stories of how the world works. So we are wired not to be highly adaptive learners. All right? We don't process things in our brain. The science is clear. We don't process things in our brain which disagree with us. So what we have to do is, okay, what does that mean? Well, how do I change that? How do I open up my mind? Well, I have to create a new story about myself, all right? That, okay, what kind of person do I want to be, knowing I need to be a better learner? And that's where it comes up to doing the work, the personal work of embracing, quieting your ego, quieting your mind, all right? Owning your mind and your ego instead of just going wherever it wants to go. How to basically relate with other human beings and truly listen to them, all right? Instead of sitting there making up your answer in your head while they're talking. And it's this personal development stuff is so, without it, it's not doable, all right? I mean, and if you think about it, I mean, one of the most successful investors, private equity people in the United States, Ray Dalio, he meditates every morning, 40 to 45 minutes at a minimum, every morning, all right? Well, why is he doing that? Because he's doing that in order to basically be able to calm himself, calm his mind, calm his ego, all right, to be able to go out into the world, all right? You take the best basketball, professional basketball teams in the United States, the NBA. Every one of them has a meditation coach that works with their players, all right? You take Warriors, the Navy, U.S. Navy SEALs, unbelievable group of human beings, all right? They are trained how to manage their emotions. Deep breathing exercises, all right? For example. And so we have all these tools which we can change ourselves. Without changing ourselves, we're not going to get to where we have to go because of the speed of change and the depth of change it's going to be. So the purpose of the book was, okay, let's go on a journey. Let's go on a journey. The journey to best self. The journey to best self. How do I become my best self? I mean, you ask anybody, do you want to be your best self? I mean, I've never heard a person say no. Okay, so how do you get there? Well, you got these things you have to do. You have to take ownership of you. And there's, you got these tools which you can use. And it's called deliberate practice. All right? So you start small and you do one or two things, but you do it every day. And then you measure yourself at night, et cetera, et cetera. And the key things to start with are meditation practices, which go back thousands of years. But it's amazing how many very bright, smart business people, et cetera, are who meditate every morning. Why? They're getting themselves ready so that they go out there and they're more calm. They're not reactive. All right? They're not, and they're actually truly trying to listen to another human being. It's making meaning together. And the research from Carnegie Mellon, MIT, is pretty strong. If you look at collaboration research, all right, MIT did 5 studies. Carnegie Mellon said that can't be right. They did 3 studies, and all 8 studies came out the same thing. And this is a very important point. All right. The best collaborating teams in all 8 studies were teams of 5 women and no men. The second best was 4 women and 1 man. The third best was 3 women and 2 men. Okay, you get the idea of where this is going? And so for us men, all right, we're wired a little bit different than women, all right? We have more work to do, all right? And so it's this, how do I want to go out in the world? How can I, and everything we're talking about is not, you know, it's not just, it's so important because it enables learning. If I'm making up my answer while you're talking, how am I learning from you? How am I understanding you? The other thing about it is, as I said, we are wired, scientifically wired, for confirmation, affirmation, cohesiveness of our stories. What's also clear from the science, whenever somebody disagrees with me or with you, if we've not done the work, our immediate reaction is defend, deny, or deflect, the 3 D's. So that's the work. And so every individual doesn't have to wait for some big major change because they're going to be involved in the world no matter what. Every individual needs to take ownership of their self and start to be on their journey to best self. And the ego thing is big. The big ego, and that's why I've, in a couple of my books I've written the 5 new smart principles. Let's redefine smart, all right? It's not how much you know. It's not knowing more than somebody else. You know, I'm defined not by what I know or how much I know, but the quality of my thinking, listening, relating, and collaborating. My stories are not reality. They're only my stories of how the world works. I'm not my ideas. I must decouple my beliefs, not my value, my beliefs from my ego. Okay? I don't have to always be right. What I have to be is always be a good learner. I don't have to always be right. I have to be a good learner.
And I think one of the exciting things about that, if we go back to the basics of it, which is what you said, is that we're trying to sort of find people that are kind of reaffirm what we think. The more people who are good learners and are talking in that way, the people that are understanding all the concepts that you're suggesting, then we have that self-fulfilling positive prophecy because we're going to find people of like-minded ideas and way of being, which means that we can really change the world in a very fast way, even on that basic level.
Yes, you're quite correct. And, you know, and I've worked with organizations and with people and teams and, you know, and when people actually do the work, it's magical because what teams have found, we can get so much more done faster than ever before because we're dealing at a higher level of engagement with each other and learning. I mean, the speed at which we can do more, we can do more better, okay? And the beautiful thing about this, it doesn't just happen in your work life. It happens in your people life too, in your home life. And it's I hate to use the word magical, but it is magical. And I mean, I've seen it. I've experienced it with people that I've worked with, and they come back and they say, you know, when this all started out, I was just sort of going along with everything because the CEO wanted us to do this. But he said, this stuff, I mean, we are so much more. I mean, organizations that I've worked with have seen their profits go like sky high because they're bringing a different way of learning, thinking, collaborating with people. They're more open-minded. They get to the right results faster. They're open to what's going on. It's. I've never had a person who basically has been on the journey you and I are talking about who basically said anything negative. And the things they always say, thank goodness I started when I started. And thank goodness I didn't quit. And a lot of people start and quit, all right, because they say that, oh, we're overwhelmed, we have too much to do. There is nothing bigger than transformation of self that's needed for the world as it exists today and as it's going forward.
And it strikes me that this reminds me a little bit about some of the most successful schools that I've been involved in or spoken to. Because what's deemed a good school, or in terms of the gradings here in the UK, an outstanding school, is, you know, the inspectorate coming and giving you it based on their criteria. And a little bit like you were saying, you know, if you relate that to business, you know, success because of the amount of money they're making or what it is that they're trying to achieve. The really great schools are the ones that have a leadership and an environment where, despite what you have to do because you're being told it or what you think you ought to do, they've created a system within their school that succeeds despite that. And by that, I mean, you know, they might have a broad curriculum. They're talking about well-being, meditation, sports are important, the arts are important, the collaboration and the critical thinking is important. And the reality is that when you have that, and that's part and parcel of what you're creating, you get those other results which seem to have been important and that someone else is telling you you've got to do because you have to, because, you know, like you say, you're creating this world which is going to give you those results anyway, because it's out there. We know that's going to be the case. I think the issue for lots of people is the fact that it takes time, it takes buy-in, it takes support. And with so many things in the world being fast-paced in terms of, you know, regular government changing or policy changing or leadership changing, you don't get far enough down there. Like you said, people quit or ideas change, become someone takes you in a different direction. But I think it's supportive to sort of see that these people who are able to say, look, we're doing this because it's the right thing. It's the important thing. It's giving our young people the opportunities that they need. And we'll get the rest of that and much more than we ever dreamed of. But we need to see it through with all of those understandings that you talked about.
You are quite correct. You said it wonderfully and beautifully and meaningfully. You are quite correct. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I just wrote an article on dealing with the issue in the United States in the public schools, and basically saying that the teacher of the now, which is needed, is really a coach. All right, teachers are going to become coaches, and teachers are going to have teaching assistants. All right, because basically, learning, the type of learning we're talking about with students and everything, comes about in small teams, comes about individually in 3 to 5 people, It's not 30 to 40 people in a classroom all trying to memorize the same stuff that's going to be tested, all right? It's helping students make meaning, all right, and how to make meaning of what is going on. And making meaning is the whole process of being in to incorporate new ways of thinking, new ways of listening, new ways of being. And so, and individual human development, if you think about it, schools are going to be in the human development business. Human development of their students. And so that's, at least in the United States, a huge new, all right, a new thing. That's not the norm, all right? There are schools, some private schools, Montessori schools, to some extent Waldorf schools. There are some schools that have that, but the large public education system is still back in the old era of, and they got to the point where, all right, well, how do we know this is working? Okay, standardized test. Everybody's got to get to this level. Well, what does standardized test mean? All right, everybody's memorizing, trying to memorize stuff. All right, that's what you're grading on. I mean, that's, you know, technology is going to basically standard, you know, technology will be the, not only a standardizer, but a creator. I mean, it's like, no, jump out of this. Jump, understand the fact that now we're talking about human transformation, human behavior, human development. How do we prepare boys and girls, men and women, to go out in a world which is so different than any world any of us have ever lived in?
I'm hoping that, and have, you know, having three children and working in schools in different ways and having conversations in the podcast, that our young people are actually much smarter than we give them credit for, because they are technology minded, they think in a different way, they interact in a different way, and I think they want the world to be a different way. And I think the sorts of things that you're talking about, the way education can be and probably will be from having coaches rather than teachers and how we're working together, is what they're going to naturally do, because they're going to have the opportunity to take ownership of what they want to learn, because they're already talking about a lot of these things that we're talking about, real learning rather than education or knowledge, and the knowledge they can get, and they can do the rest of the things on their own. And because the world is so small now, you know, I find a lot of the information and support I need in groups, organizations, things that's out in different countries, you know, we're talking across the Atlantic, and they know that because they've just been part of that for such a long period of time. And I hope they have the ability to sort of take that leap forward on their own, rather than having to say, like you say, wait for a system to catch up to give them that, because it might be great for the people in 10 years time, but we've got 10 years of people going through that are going to want it to be different in the here and now.
Yeah, you're quite correct. And I'm as you are, I'm hopeful for the young people. And I have two granddaughters, and I'm, you know, we talk often and all of this, and, you know, I share my ideas with them, and I'm hopeful. I agree with you. I'm hopeful. The thing that, let's just say the older generation, or the generation, older generation that is not willing to adapt or doesn't believe they need to adapt or et cetera, et cetera. I hope they stand aside, so to speak. All right. I mean, not saying they, you know, go on welfare. What I'm saying is, all right, even if you got a job, don't hinder and hold back people that see a different route, that see a different way of being, that see a different world than we grew up in, etc. Don't force them to adopt your way, because our way, you know, let's just say anybody over 40, you know, our way is not the way. All right. I mean, now there are people who have either transformation, they're different. But I mean, it's, and you're right, the speed of the change and what's going on, the volatility, you know, predicting out more than 5, 6, 7 years, who knows? I mean, we got, at least in the United States, you know, GPT-4, all right, 5 is supposed to come out next March. I mean, how many are there going to be? I mean, there can be GPT-25s, all right? But they're not going to, you know, 25's got to be a heck of a lot better than number 5, all right? But it, that's what's going on here. And it's sort of like, okay, new game, folks. New game. Time out. Deep breath. New game. New story. New way of being. We can all do this. Let's go. All right? But that's not going to happen. And so you're right. What's going to happen is there's going to be groups. And I'm, my only concern about the younger generation is the ownership of their emotions and the ownership of their thinking. Because in social media and technology, there's been lots of hacking of young people's emotions. All right. And there's, you know, at least in the United States, I mean, teenage deaths is off the charts. All right. Same thing. So taking, you know, knowing, if you will, how to use the technology and not hacking people's emotions. And now with AI, we have there's the opportunity for people to hack how people think. So we've got to make sure we're reining in the technology in certain ways, all right, that actually enable what you're talking about and what I'm talking about. And that's mission critical. And at this stage of the game, we, you know, in some parts, the EU is probably, doing the best with this of anybody in the world, all right? We, you know, that's mission critical, all right? Let's make sure that that the technology is being used for positive growth, learning experiences, not manipulation.
And in terms of your sort of education experiences or a teacher that you had, is there one that you remember that had an impact? And I'm always curious, how does that then look or reflect in terms of the way you're thinking now in the books that you've written and the sort of work that you've done?
Well, I've been very, very fortunate. I've had, during my life, I call them angels. I've had 25 different angels, all right? Some are higher level angels than other angels, but people that basically saw something in me and gave me opportunity and, you know, and encouraged me. And it was, I've had three different careers, all right? Two of which I wasn't trained for, maybe even the third one. But, you know, it all started for me in the eighth grade with the football coach, all right, who basically, you know, came to me and said, you know, how would you like to, you know, to work with me, like da da da, and I told you about that. I mean, and he was the one who basically helped me become a good learner, helped me be accepted, but encouraged me to, why don't I write an article? And so I wrote my first article when I was 16 years old that was published in a national high school football journal. And then he looked at me and he said, what do you want to do with college? I said, I don't know, coach. My family doesn't have a lot of money. And this coach basically helped me get a full scholarship, athletic scholarship, even though I wasn't an athlete, to go to school. And I became an athletic trainer, and then I became a data analyst. And that data analyst part was where also my learning basically took off when I was in college. So my high school coach, one of my psychology coaches at in college, who was mentored by Abraham Maslow, did wonders for me. I had, in law school, I had professors who took me under their wings. I mean, I came from, a pretty poor background. I mean, in law school I went to was a top law school, and I was just very different than the other kids. And, professor basically at the end of the first semester of the first year called me and he said, "Ed," he said, "you didn't do well on this test, and I know you're smarter than this." He said, "And you don't write well." And this professor said, "I'm going to teach you how to write, and we're going to write together." Da da da. And that professor was Professor Antonin Scalia, who ultimately went on to the Supreme Court of the United States. But he taught me how to write, and all of a sudden, yes, my first half year in law school, my grades were B and C, but from there on out, they were A's and A pluses. So I had people that helped me learn, and the same thing happened in the business world. All right, I mean, the opportunity to go to Wall Street as a senior partner in a big firm, and the CEO and chairman was a person that I worked for years earlier, and he called me up and said, "Come up to see me in New York." And he said, "I want you to join my firm and be this," and yeah, big title, all this kind of stuff, but that's not relevant. He says, "And I want you to do this." I said, "I don't know how to do that." I said, "To be honest, I don't know how you do an internal rate of return." All right. I mean, this is Wall Street. And he looked at me and he says, "I know that, Ed, but I know you. And I know you'll know by Friday afternoon how you do an IRR." And he said, "I trust you." And, so I've had so many people that gave me opportunities because they saw something in me that I guess was worth investing in. I don't know how else to say it, but they were kind and generous. And, I've had the same thing happen in academia. I wasn't an academic, all right? I was a business person and a lawyer, but I came into academia in the business world and have had a wonderful career. 20 years, 20 plus years. Why? Because other people. And so if you are a person that basically emanates emotionally and behaviorally in ways that relate to other people and are caring and not competitive and not mean and not hostile and all of that stuff, the world sort of, everybody can have an angels or have angels because people are attracted to that.
And I think it really, that's kind of the non-verbal human side of everything that we've been talking about in terms of what we're trying to do to improve ourselves, to put ourselves in that position to allow that to happen, I think, as well. Like you say, where the ego disappears, and you just allow that to be, and you can then give that back in a way that you can as well. It makes the world go round, which is kind of what we've been talking about, I think, for most of this time. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, or indeed, is there a piece of advice you'd give your younger self looking back now?
Best piece of advice. Well, one of the best pieces of advice was given to me by my wife, who's a wonderful woman, and she's she has three different degrees. And earlier in our marriage, in our 30s and everything, we were having a conversation, and we were disagreeing, and I was becoming pretty heated. She was pretty calm, and she basically says, time out. You are very, emotionally hostile right now. She says, "Do you realize that you can manage your emotions?" I said, "What'd you say?" I says, "Do you realize you can learn how to manage your emotions?" I said, "No, I never heard that." She says, "Well, you can. And you should learn how to do that or get some help to do that." And so I found a wonderful woman who was from Columbia University and a renowned scientist and everything. And she basically became my, we'll call it, emotional coach. And she taught me how to take ownership of my emotions. And so, you know, I've had those things where all of a sudden it's like, no, I never, I mean, you know, my wife was said another time, she says, "When you feel something emotionally, do you know that you don't automatically have to behave that way?" I said, "No, I didn't know that." She says, "Yes, you can take deep breaths and slow yourself down. Your emotions are not intricately linked to moving your body or your tone. You can stop it." That was another example. And so, yeah, I've had people who have been very kind to me, very gracious to me. I remember them every night when I do my daily meditations and thank them, and grateful to them. And, you know, I've been very, very fortunate, and I don't really know why, or I don't know why I've been was so fortunate, but I'm grateful.
I love it. And just as we round up, the acronym FIRE is very important for us here. And by that, we mean feedback, inspiration, resilience, and empowerment. What is it that strikes you when you hear that?
I think those four words are a fantastic, fantastic states what I've been trying to do the last 20 years in my life and the 15 books that I wrote. Most everything I've done is basically based upon how to enable and use those. I mean, feedback is a tool, feedback, but it's how you do it, all right? So feedback, mission critical. Inspiration, mission critical, all right? Resilience, absolutely mission critical. Empowerment, not only empowerment of me, but me empowering others is mission critical. And so I think you nailed it. I think you hit the ball out of the park.
Well, that's very kind, and it's a great honor for you to say that based on all the amazing work that you've done. So please do share. Where's the best people to find out more about you and to sort of enter your world and all the great work that you've been doing?
Well, people can look at my big website, www.edhess.org, or they can look at my new website for the new book, all right, which is www.ownyourworkjourney.com. But I'm on LinkedIn. You know, they can Google me. I show up because of the number of books, etc. I'm pretty easy to find. And that doesn't mean that's not an ego thing. It's just that that's just the way the world works right now with all the technology. I mean, you know, it's just the technology just sucks everything in. And, you know, if somebody wants to write me, I mean, you know, reach out on LinkedIn and just put it in the message and I will get back to them. And, you know, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to have been with you. I applaud what you're doing. And I not only applaud what you're doing, you know, it's clear you're on a good journey for yourself, because how you do it, what you do and everything and the meaning and the opportunities you're trying to do to people, you're a good soul.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And thank you for your time and your wisdom. And yeah, keep doing everything you're doing. And I'm so glad we've had a chance to share this with everybody. And I'm absolutely sure it's making a difference. So that's what we're here to do.
All the best. All the best.
Thank you for listening and being part of this wonderful community. With over 300 episodes, I've collated 20 resources from guests that have been on the show to help you in your educational journey and those of you involved with young people. Just go to educationonfire.com and you can sign up on the homepage.
Thanks for listening to the Education on Fire podcast. For more information of each episode and to get in touch, go to educationonfire.com.
Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire.